Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello and welcome into the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. I'm National Recruiting Analyst Cooper Patagno alongside 24/7 Sports Director of Scouting, Andrew Ivins. We've got a very special guest with us today. That is Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, one of the best NFL draft analysts in all of the country. And Lance, we were just talking about it, man. Late night for you, just getting into Indianapolis on this Tuesday, February 27th. Big week for you, obviously, in the evaluation process. What year is it for you covering the NFL Combine?
Well, for NFL, I mean, I've been here before. I work for the NFL, but this is going to be my 10th draft. I've been at the combine each of those years, but you know, truth be told, I've been to like two or three other combines. So probably my 13th combine, but it's my 10th consecutive combine. That's crazy to believe, but yeah, I started, in 14, the fall of 14 doing the 15 draft. So I have 5,000 scouting reports in the books for NFL.com coming up here in about a month and a half. So, but always fun to go to Indy and see these guys in person as opposed to on tape.
What's the biggest thing that you have noticed, I would say, over the last 10 years with the NFL? And I don't know, I feel like the combine's become such a spectacle now. What's the biggest change maybe you've seen over the last 10 years?
Well, so it's kind of twofold. That's a good question because it's a little bit layered. Number one, the draft has become a season. So there's an NFL draft season. And I've been in this space for about 20 years. Like I was really into it starting about 2000, 2001. So I've been around and I've seen it headed in this direction. I've told people for years that this is where it's going. And I told people how big it was going to get, and it's done just that. So I think the way that it's become, you know, Senior Bowl is this massive hub of draft nicks and people coming in, and Combine has really become that too. I mean, it's become much more accessible for fans, for people who follow the draft. And now it's this, you know, it used to just be the first round. Unless you were really into the draft, people only cared about the first round. But now a lot of the fans care about second, third, fourth round prospects. So it's really become a huge spectacle. And as you mentioned, but not only that, it's more accessible. I think the NFL has done a good job of making it more accessible. And for a lot of people who just wanted the combine to be their own little thing, which is kind of all of us, you know, in the space, it's a little more wide open now. So I'm hoping Roger Goodell and the NFL keeps it in Indianapolis. I think it's perfect here. I don't mind the draft traveling. I think that's a great marketing concept. I don't love the combine because this is really not for the fans as much as it is for making sure that teams and players have everything centrally located so that, you know, all the information can be accumulated in a timely fashion. And downtown Indiana is just perfectly suited for that.
Well, they've commercialized it, right? Primetime coverage. I got my DVR set. Lance, what is the biggest storyline, I guess, you're tracking for the 2024 Scouting Combine? I'm sure you've had to answer this question before, but what is the one key storyline for you?
Well, I think it's going to be, you know, I don't know. It seems like every day I'm hearing about a new guy who's not going to work out. So I would have told you it's Malik Nabers and his chance to shoot past Marvin Harrison Jr., in the wide receiver rankings more, you know, I've got him ahead of Marvin just barely, but I thought this was going to be his big chance. Marvin said he's he has no agent. He's not preparing for any workouts. He's not going to work out. he's only going to prepare for his NFL season. I really thought that was going to give, and it still may give, you know, Neighbors the chance to potentially pick up more steam and kind of move past them with public sentiment and even with teams. But it's not going to happen at the combine, so it doesn't really answer your question. I think it's going to be, you know, I guess I'm hearing Drake May is not going to throw now as well at the combine. So it could be the combine of J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix. Can one of those guys do enough to really excite people? I think there's some people in the NFL that are really, you know, excited about the potential of J.J. McCarthy. But I look at Bo Nix, and I thought he had a fantastic year, not only statistically but on tape. I thought he was really he's not the same guy we saw at Auburn. I know people want to hang on to that notion, but he's not the same guy. He's a much better player right now and much more experienced. And, you know, I think that now those two guys specifically, to a lesser extent, Penix, I still think Penix from a medical standpoint, that's going to be a big hurdle for him to clear. But I think there's room for one of those two guys to really shine and push himself up. And I think the other, you know, I think the other storyline is going to be, how do these defensive ends work out and how do they stack? Because Jared Verse, Latu from Washington, or UCLA rather, Chop Robinson, Dallas Turner. I mean, these are all talented guys. Chop's a mega athlete who's not a very, you know, polished rusher at all. Latu's one of the most polished rushers that I've ever studied. You know, Verse is a kind of combination of the explosiveness and you know, some polish. And then you have Dallas Turner, who's a Nick Saban guy, who you know is going to be technically sound. He's got great traits. And so how those guys stack out for me is really going to be interesting, along with the offensive tackles, because tackle and pass rush, there is an interesting – there's a wide variance of where people have these guys rated. So we could see it clear up a little bit with the combine.
Lance, you mentioned it earlier, and you mentioned guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, who's at the top of your board, and I'll follow up on a question with him here in a second. Jaden Daniels, Drake May, some of the guys that have opted out, all five of those guys appear to have the talent to potentially go top 10. What's your reaction when a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. or maybe a guy like Drake May, you hear the news that they are going to opt out and not participate in the combine?
Well, you know, it's disappointing for me on a personal level, but, you know, I have to look at this from their standpoint. I can kind of get it on Marvin Harrison's point, you know, from his standpoint. I think that, you know, I think realistically he's not going to run like Neighbors. And I think that from a storyline standpoint, what could have developed here and what I was kind of anticipating initially was that Neighbors was going to have the bigger workout. And then it would really change up the national conversation about Neighbors versus Harrison. Harrison takes himself out of the running. Well, now you can't, you know, you don't have anything to judge Neighbors against. And I was really shocked to hear Neighbors wasn't going to work out, because it's a fast track in Indy. And I think it's always a good idea to try to run at Indy. I don't know if Neighbors isn't really ready to run. I don't know what's going on and why he wouldn't work out. Daniels, you know, quarterback's not throwing. That's not new. So that wasn't crazy. But Drake May really had an opportunity to I think, help himself by having a good workout. If he threw the ball well and threw the ball with some accuracy and threw it with a little better touch than we saw in college, I think he could have really helped to cement himself as a number two prospect. On tape, Jaden Daniels is simply better than him. But the traits, that's a big check mark to Drake May. And I thought this is a great opportunity with two quarterbacks out of the running to work out here. This conversation could be about Drake May. And then now he dropped out. So, you know, I think that it is disappointing, but I think it's a mistake for May, and I think it's a mistake for Neighbors, because I think it really gave both those guys an opportunity to get a bump that they may very well need as it pertains to slotting in the first 5 to 6 picks.
Well, it's one of my favorite things you do. I mean, you go on NFL.com, and I would encourage all of our listeners to check it out. I believe you've written up every guy that's going to be at the combine this year. You have a scouting report up on them. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. If you just Google combine tracker, it'll be one of the first things that pops up. So, yeah, the 2024 combine, all my scouting reports will be on there for all the players.
Take us through that process. I mean, how long or how big of a monster is that? I mean, you're talking to two guys that have to do it on the high school side, but how long have you been working on that? And how many guys are you writing up every year?
It's a monster because the first landmark I have is the Senior Bowl. All the players for the Senior Bowl need to be done. Actually, I take that back. The first landmark is the first mock draft after the last day for players to pull themselves out of the draft or to declare for the draft. After that, there's going to be a mock draft coming out on NFL.com shortly. It'll be, you know, usually Daniel Jeremiah. So I need to have all those players written. So you need to have, you know, those top 35 to 40 players in consideration, which includes underclassmen. Then I need to have everybody that's going to be in Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 written. Then everyone who is in the Senior Bowl. And then after that, it's a mad dash for the combine. So what happens is I start my process late October. I'll start writing up typically smaller school prospects, guys who I think, you know, guys who are on the Senior Bowl watch list, because those are guys who usually have a very good chance of, you know, getting an invite to the combine, potentially being drafted. And so I will, most of the time I like to work on offensive line and defensive line, because small schools typically will play the best competition early in the season because they're the out of conference competition and sometimes catching those paychecks, and they end up against some pretty good competition. So I can get a good look at, you know, those players playing against, you know, players from maybe elevated schools. And basically to kind of shorten a story up here, I have to average about 100. My goal is to get about 65 to 70 done in November. And then I'm 100 in December, you know, all the way through Christmas. It's almost 7 days a week, basically. Same thing with January, about 7 days a week. And then February, whatever I've got left over, which this year put me to 343 total players. That's what I've got to get done for February. And then I'll write somewhere over 480. So it used to be 500 was the mark, but that was kind of, you know, there's years where you just don't need to do that. But the flip side of that coin is if somebody gets drafted and I don't have a scouting report, I've got to write one after the draft. And let me tell you who doesn't want to have to write scouting reports after the draft. It's me. So it's an arduous process, but really it's more like a marathon. You just have to stay on pace, try to get 3 to 4 players done a day. And days where you got to write quarterbacks, it's going to take a lot longer. Days when you're writing top 10 to 15 players, it's going to take a lot longer. And, you know, it's just a matter of trying to stay focused, drink your coffee, and keep an open and clear mind, because it's, like I said, a race to the combine. And after this, I've still got another 140, 150, but that seems like a crazy amount to people. Over the course of 2 months, that's like nothing. It's a matter of finding the right guys to write up. So it's really more of an Easter egg hunt to go find the guys who have the big workouts at their pro days or the guys who are flying under the radar. So it's a different type of writing up. It's trying to unearth those late round guys.
So how important is the combine to that process? You know, I find that so fascinating. Our job is to project high school players to the NFL where they might be drafted, which is, you know, it feels close to impossible at times because the physical trajectory of the player, obviously, you take into consideration, but the development on the field as well. I wonder for you, there's obviously some looming questions as you get into February, into this specific event. How much can a evaluation for you based off of what you've seen maybe 2 years of tape prior really change from what they do this week in Indy?
Well, it's very specific things, Cooper. I mean, you know, you do have some situations where you're watching tape and it's a matter of competition. You don't get a good feel for competition across from them, and you hope to see them, you know, like at the Senior Bowl or Shrine Game, have some live competition. And if you don't really get that, or even if you do get that, sometimes it's just a matter of getting on the field and seeing how they're built, like seeing what the body types look like. I'm a big believer in traits and body types. Chris Ballard's made me a believer in that. And so there's certain guys that are just built like NFL players. And, you get on the field and you get to see what these guys look like, see the, you know, the hips and the legs and the calves. And I'm talking about, you know, certain positions. You want to see, get a feel for a player's length. And then once they start working out, I want to see, it's very, very easy and very quick to find out, especially because these guys are all staggered at the same position. So if I'm watching guys get through a slant route, get into a little out route, get into, you know, running dig routes, and it's one after the next, boy, it makes it easy to stack them because you see who's got the tighter hips. You see who can get in and out quickly. You see who's more focused. You see who's more smooth through the routes and who's more labored. And I think that's one of the big advantages at the combine is it allows you to stack players more easily because you see, you know, they're going back to back to back and you're like, oh man, this guy just stands out. Oh, look at this guy's body language is phenomenal. Zay Flowers is like that. Seeing him in person, you're like, holy crap. Zay Flowers is just different. He's got an aggression level and a confidence level that jumped off the turf. So, yeah, I do think that the combine can really, for me, offensive lineman, a lot of the stuff doesn't matter, but there are a couple things that give me a little bit more idea about if tackles have enough range to set out to defensive ends, or are they going to have to potentially bump inside the guard or in some cases center. So, there are some things very specifically that I can take from it, but sometimes it's just a feel for the alphas. It's just a feel for the dudes. They have a different energy, and it may sound crazy, but when you're on the field, you can sense it and you can see it.
I know we're on audio, but both me and Cooper are smiling here because we get that all the time. Hey, these guys, it's not padded football. It's just this combine setting. And I'm like, no, it's, You can sort them real fast when they're all and going through the same drills, the same workouts. You know who wants to be there. You know who's prepared. So thank you, Lance, for singing the gospel for us.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, like, what you guys do has got to be damn near impossible. I think I had somebody who worked in the NFL for years, went to college, back in the NFL now. It's Alonzo Highsmith, and he's back with Elliot Wolf in New England. He left the Miami Hurricanes, and you know, I remember him talking about the easiest job is as a pro scout, you know, scouting players who are in the league for free agency, doing advanced scouting, things like that. And he's right. Going college to pro is harder than doing that. Going high school to college has got to be the toughest because level of competition is so different. Growth patterns are so different. The technique and skill, there's no, you know, you can't really judge for technique. You're just looking for physical abilities. And I know my son's working in Alabama in the recruiting department, just cutting up tape. And I told him, you know, I gave him some critical factors and critical traits he needs to look for. But I just told him, look, it's all about just finding guys who have certain types of traits, certain types of ability to do things. If they're not there yet, it's not the end of the world. Now, Nick Saban recruited very fine-tuned players. There were fully grown height, weight, speed guys, and a lot of them did have some technical ability. And of course, you got coached up big time. I don't know how it's going to change under Kalen DeBoer, but I think it's amazing that you guys have the ability to project certain players because it's such an uneven surface that you have to wade through as it pertains to quality of competition and, you know, where guys are physically versus where they are skill-wise.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, back to the point of the combine, it feels so different in terms of the weight of the evaluation process when you're evaluating players in high school versus where you have them right now, the biggest job interview of their lives as they get ready for the NFL. For us, and I've always thought this has really kind of been, you know, personal philosophy here, but there's so much more weight put into the athlete at this stage of their career more than the football player. Like you want to know what's in their body. Are they capable of doing it? And have they flashed it, right? And then in terms of the technical development on field ability, that develops over the next 3 to 4 years in college. So it's fascinating to kind of see the differences. And I'm glad you brought up the variables that come into play when projecting guys 4 to 5 years out. Because all we hear is, you know, that it's a science or it's a math equation and
no, you
know, and it's far from it. I think that's yeah, the beauty of the game.
All right. So, you know, something interesting in 2019, me and Tyler Oberle, who was at that time director of analytics for Tampa Bay Bucks. He's my business partner with a little side business we have called Scout Source, and we work with some college teams. And I knew Tom Herman. He was at Texas. And Tyler created an algorithm based on 20 years of combine data that also included some growth stuff that is not made public. And what he can do is project, you know, frame size for high school players. And so we asked if we could come get height, weight, wingspan, hand size, wrist, knee circumference, and, you know, run our algorithm. And he said, yeah. He said, that's, and we also have proprietary athletic scores based on, you know, historical data from the combine and how players ended up performing it. So we have scores that create an athletic score and then frame projection, what you can carry, what size you likely will be. And it's, we wanted to create a proof of concept. So we went out to Texas and he said, okay, why don't you, or the guy who was in charge of his recruiting said, why don't you, everybody who's got a 100 number is the guys we're recruiting. And we said, well, look, Tyler and I both do evaluations, you know, also for a living. You mind if we kind of eyeball some guys and pull them aside? He goes, yeah, absolutely. So we did that. And we gathered information and put it all together and then, you know, put it into the system. It cranked out sizes. And one of the guys who we found, and I wrote him up as, I just wrote something briefly about his movement. I watched him run the hoop. I'm like, his movement is loose and fluid, and he had a good athletic score. And his growth potential was, at the time, he was 6 foot 272 as a, I want to say a junior in high school. And we had him projected to be 6'2", 305. And he was not being recruited by University of Texas at that time, but they took our information. They started looking at him on tape because they really weren't looking at him too much. They convinced their defensive line coach that, you know, let's give him a shot. Let's give him a scholarship, see if he can grow into this. These guys think he can. And, you know, and from an eyeball test, what do you think? Yeah, he's got a shot. So he did it. And that player ended up becoming Byron Murphy. And Byron Murphy, who was not recruited at Texas at that particular time, went from being like a two, maybe a three-star to became a four-star after Texas signed him. He grew pretty quickly. He did not hit 6 foot two, but he is 308. And, I mean, this guy's solid muscle too. And everything that – and so, you know, we kind of had our proof of concept. There's another guy who was a tight end, and we told Texas his growth was up to 305. And, oh no, I'm sorry, 300 pounds. And the kid said, I'm a tight end. So they wanted to recruit him at Texas. He ended up going to TCU as a tight end. And within a year, they moved him to tackle the same way. And now he's 290 pounds. So we kind of had that proof of concept. And we went to Miami. And one of the selling points with Miami, I said, look, this is what's crazy. It's the last 10 years, Miami and Texas have had fewer. Over the last 10 years, Miami and Texas have had fewer top three-round offensive linemen drafted than Northern Iowa and Central Michigan has in the last 3 years. And what was interesting is three of those players were former tight ends who became tackles, Luke Gadicke, Spencer Brown, and Bernard Raymond. And then the other guy gained almost 100 pounds at Northern Iowa, and that was what's his name from
Trevor Penning.
Trevor Penning, yeah. And all those guys obviously gained a lot of weight, but the fact is you have to learn how to project size, and that's not easy. And those guys who fall under the radar and go to smaller schools, they're just late bloomers, or they haven't had the weight or the nutritional stuff. And so that's why projecting those guys is really difficult. But even on this level, you have to understand how much more growth is possible for a player, because one thing that you learn very, very quickly, if you think a guy's, you have a tendency to think this is who guys are at age 21 and 22, not even close. The physical body type continues to change drastically with, you know, as they grow into adulthood, they eat and lift differently. Man, the body types at age 25 and 26, sometimes I look back at what I wrote about guys and say, holy crap, you know, man, was I wrong on this?
Lance, it's pretty funny. I have this rundown of questions that I was supposed to ask you, and I don't think I've asked you one of them. And I just keep kind of going off road to where the conversation keeps going. So I guess I'll continue with that. You know, we've seen teams like Georgia and maybe some guys that have come out recently, like DeJuan Jones, and have had some success maybe in that day two range, bigger body types. Orlando Brown kind of comes to mind a little bit as well. Is there a personal philosophy there for you? Would you rather have the body type where you got to add some weight on a guy, or does it scare you away when you got to melt a little off the bone?
Oh, man, that's such a tough one, because my dad was, you know, a longtime college and pro offensive line coach. And I remember the first thing he learned moving from college to pros, it took 1 year, and he realized, if you don't have functional strength, you can't make it in the NFL. Like, you must have a certain level of functional strength, or you'll get pushed into the pocket and you won't be able to play. You won't be able to make it. And so the bigger bone guys typically have more functional strength, and that's a big advantage. The guys you have to add weight to, that's always a concern. It's always a concern. And that's not to say the bigger guys, you know, you always worry about footwork, you always worry about getting a certain blocks, but I'll give you an example. DeJuan Jones bothered me last year because if you cross-faced him with a rush counter, you took him outside and went back in, he couldn't really redirect his weight back inside, and you could beat him inside. He played at the Senior Bowl on day one. Nobody tried to beat him inside. He just mauled everybody, looked incredible, left the Senior Bowl. And I just kept thinking, well, no one tried him where his biggest weakness is. And what he learned to do is play more inside out. So he sets because his arms.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
They're like giant limbs. He basically sets real tight inside and he forces you around, and that's where he redirects with those long arms. And so you learn to play with your strengths and minimize your weaknesses. And as long as you have good lean mass, like a lot of these NFL guys will put you in a DEXA scan and find out what your lean mass numbers are. And if you're carrying real bad weight, they don't like it. But if you just are a naturally huge human like DeJuan Jones or like Mims from Georgia, teams aren't going to worry about it. They're going to worry about how do you move, and you know, are the areas that you have correctable. But if you're not a bad body weight guy, then it doesn't bother me as much as it used to. I used to be a pretty feet, pretty pass sets. Orlando Brown is a great example of got guys blocked, didn't look great on tape doing it, but guys got blocked, had a terrible combine. People were ready to bury the guy. And then, after that, it was, you know, just a matter of he got into the league and did the same thing he did at Oklahoma. Block guys. He didn't have to look pretty, but he used his length. He didn't get bull rushed. And so I would much rather have a guy with, you know, the size and the physical traits than a guy you have to project to get bigger. But that's not, you know, but But once again, that kind of runs contrary to what I just told you about guys who can grow into it. And the guys who, if you can project their frame that they'll grow into it, then you just want to know that they have enough nasty, because they're probably coming from a different position in some cases. And you just want to know, do they have the mentality it takes to be an offensive lineman? Because that's a different breed. So, you know, if you do have that little, you know, that little crap in your neck that you need to have, a little prick, as they say, in your business, then that's good. That's good. Then you can put the weight on, get the functional strength. But there's a lot of ways you can test guys' core strength and functional strength. So you can be 305 pounds and have great core strength and you don't have a problem. But if you are 315 and you can't bend and you don't have great core strength, you'll get rolled back into the pocket snap after snap after snap.
Lance, I want to ask you, obviously you're a big offensive line guy. I think you're one of the few people that has J.C. Latham as your top-ranked tackle. I could be wrong, but in your mock, you had him going, I think, number 10 overall to the New York Jets. Guy I'm super familiar with. He was at IMG Academy, protected J.J. McCarthy's blind side as a senior. In your evaluation, you're like, he could be a right tackle or a Pro Bowl caliber guard. Just, you know, what's the evaluation been like on him? Because I feel like it's the exact same one we had 3 years ago when he moved from Wisconsin to IMG and made the transition from defensive end to offensive line.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, he looks like a Nick Saban player guy to some, Nick Saban player to some extent. There's a little bit of difference, but he's a big, thick bone guy. And the first thing I want to see is, okay, and you can see on tape right away, he's a mauler. Like, he just pushes people around in a run game. So that's a big plus in terms of his drive blocking power, in terms of his lower body girth. You know, he's got the girth of a guard, but anytime you can play tackle, that's obviously a big benefit. He's big enough. He's got, you know, he's got the measurables to play tackle. So I wanted to see him, and the SEC is going to give you plenty of looks. Like, you'll get looks against good athletes. So the more I watched him, I just said, look, he's, from a technique standpoint, most Alabama offensive and defensive linemen are going to be technically sound. And that's pretty much the case. And he's got good technique. I think, you know, there's going to be a few times where guys are going to hit his corner and you're going to wonder, is he going to have to lunge a little bit to redirect guys up and around the pocket? But the problem a lot of people will make, the mistake they'll make, is you see a guy get beat around the corner, you think, that's it, you know, can't play tackle, can't get that block. Well, there's different tricks to it. You know, you can obviously put a tight end there, kind of widen the rusher out. You can obviously go with more of a vertical set if you want to. There is more quick setting that a tackle can do. You can have him jump out on the guy if he's not a wide nine and kind of take his rush momentum away. There's a lot of different things you could do. You shouldn't panic just because you see a guy get beat around the edge, unless it's happening way, way too often and you think it's just a matter of the guy's not quick enough. But anytime I've got a guy who has that size, that plus ability as a run blocker, I mean, he can really wipe you out. And then he's technically sound too. I think that, and when he locks you up, I mean, the chin's tucked, he's got the back flat, he locks in with his hands, and he'll just stone you and keep you there. It wasn't even that hard of a decision for me. I know everyone's on Joe Alton. You know, Fashanu from Penn State has some real holes in his game that remind me of Ekwonu coming out. So I'm nervous about him. Alt's rock solid, but there's nothing that really shines. I don't see anything that shines with him. When I see I want somebody who has a big elite trait if I can get it as an offensive lineman. And his elite trait is his run blocking, but his pass pro is good too. So it wasn't that hard a call for me to make Latham the top tackle, because I know worst case scenario, he'll fail inside and be a really, really good guard.
Lance, since we're talking about offensive linemen and we've kind of gone down the rabbit hole here, a guy that, you know, we recruited when I was at Washington, Troy Fautanu, and similar to Andrew and, you know, his story with J.C. Latham, you know, Fautanu was a guy that we thought was a good enough athlete to play tackle, but it would eventually move inside. We knew he had the length. He had 34-inch arms. And quite honestly, we were unsure whether or not we were going to take him until Liberty and Nevada ended up scheduling IMG And he held up really well against Nolan Smith, now with the Philadelphia Eagles and a first-round draft choice. Where do you see him? And the other thing I want to plug in here, I also know that you're on the Joe Moore award committee as well. So I know you have dug in on Washington and Fatanu to quite the extent.
Yeah, Fatanu is, you know, you just want so badly just to push him inside the guard. He's got that broad waist, broad chest. He's mean as piss. Physical. I mean, there's everything you like about the physicality of him. He was caving people in the Texas game. And you just want to move him inside the guard so bad and just say, let's just get it over with and let's make him a road grading guard. But the fact is, he does have 34-inch arms. And you know, it's surprising. You look at him, you don't think he does. It's measured. I mean, it's verified. He's a 34-inch arm guy, which is a good length for offensive tackles. He is pretty nimble afoot. I don't think the speed is a big problem for him. He can set out on people. And you know, as much as I think that his final position is guard, the fact is tackle's such an important position that you just don't want to write that off. If a guy can play tackle, if he has the length, if he has the enough foot quickness, you don't want to just write that off because it's such an important position for so many teams. I think that tackle guard, like he's an immediate two flex. He's a positional. He's got position flex, which is important come draft day because, you know, you can only – you're only going to have eight guys a lot of times on the offensive line that you're going to take with you on road games, sometimes only seven. So you got to be able to play multiple positions. But he's another one of those guys with the plus run blocking power. He's got the nasty demeanor that we talked about previously. He's built like a pro with the wide waist, the girthy. Well, I shouldn't even say girthy. I mean, he's just a wide, strong guy. And then when you look at the rest of the offensive line, I mean, Rosengarten's got, you know, he's got good size. He's not built like a Greek god or anything out there at tackle, but from guard, center, guard, I mean, it wasn't that impressive body type wise. And I was on the field looking at, I wanted to go see Washington's players and Texas players, right? You know, and I went and looked at Sweat and I looked at Byron Murphy and I looked at all the players from Texas. And it's like the body type difference was astonishing between Washington and Texas. And yet when they got out there and played, you know, Kalen DeBoer and that coaching staff just, they showed what they're about. You know, you can get, you just need to get the right kind of guys that are wired right in college. And whether they get to the pros or not, sometimes is irrelevant because you're trying to win games on the collegiate level. And if you develop them, if they get wired up right, if they are technically sound, and you have good coaches, offensive and defensive coordinators, I mean, you can win at a high level. And Washington was a great example. But to your point about Fautanu, I mean, you know, I'm interested. I just keep assuming he's going to get moved to guard. But, man, if he can play tackle, why would you take him out of the tackle spot?
Well, it's getting a little away from the big boys. So I know we can riff on that for a while. I mean, NFL scouting combine, all eyes or the general public, they're going to be on that 40-yard dash. You know, me and Cooper were at a personnel convention back in the summer, and there was a lot of talk about the GPS tracking. You hear it come up, you know, occasionally. How important is the time still and you know, your thoughts on the GPS metrics in terms of max speed and all that stuff?
Another guy I work with who has created his own computer vision, he's one of the best data scientists in the world. And I asked him, he's a director of analytics as well for a collegiate team. And I asked him about the 40-yard dash versus the GPS data and the miles per hour data. And, you know, his whole thing is for him, it is for wide receivers, for example, he's got first speed and second speed. He breaks it down into a first speed, a second speed, a deceleration, an acceleration out of breaks. So he's got multiple accelerations. He's got multiple speeds that he looks at. So when you're talking about a football team, they're really breaking it down. At least I think the good ones who have, you know, that data through Catapult or whatever the case may be, they're really quantifying more than just max speed. They're quantifying types of speed, which I think is very interesting because it really can get to what type of route runner a player can be and what you can do with certain routes. In terms of max speed, one of the things I found in talking to, you know, people from Zebra and people who have been around in sports science, it can be a little bit deceiving because you've got to find, you know, you've got to find opportunities where a guy is going to be at his top speed. Like there are cornerbacks who, you know, aren't really field fast, but they'll hit max speed you don't expect because they're in trail and there's an extra gear that they can access when they're in panic mode, but it's not a speed that they're going to typically play at. So it can be a little bit deceiving, but I believe that that's the future. The 40-yard dash right now is just a normalizer across years, but really a lot of NFL teams are starting to go to they're starting to go to the GPS data, max speed, and then, you know, breaking down the speeds and creating different types of grades on what different types of speeds. So that's really going to be the 40 is not going to go anywhere, but we also know that that's, you know, that's really interesting for comparison's sake, but how fast you play is really more important.
Lance, just you know, thinking about one of the last questions here, and we like to break it down. You know, we have 247 players we have to rank nationally, right? That's what we call our top 247, and we break it down. We try to emulate the NFL draft as much as possible, you know, with 262 draft picks on a given year. I'm interested for you, and I know for us, we like the platform on our show to be able to kind of call our shots a little bit. Can you give me a favorite player for every day in the NFL draft where you think these guys are going?
Yeah, so I would say for where I see them drafted, day one, day two, day three?
Correct.
Yeah, I would say day one, it's going to be I want to give you somebody that – I'll say Jared Verse, defensive end, Florida State, came from Albany and then transferred over there. He got a look at my – I had written him last year. I thought he was coming out, and he didn't come out. And the guy who eventually ended up representing him was – he was doing some, I think, some NIL stuff and reached out to me and asked about my scouting report and if – I thought if he said, would it be okay if Jared saw how you wrote him so he could take a look at that stuff and maybe work on some stuff? I was like, yeah, it's, you know, that's fine. And he actually went to school on some of the stuff, because when I watched him on tape this year, I was like, holy crap, he's way better at this, way better with his hands. This guy is a ball of fury. He comes out of his stance and just hammers tackles. He's way stronger than his listed weight. He is explosive into contact. He gets rid of blockers instantly, and he's got a rush that I just think translates to the NFL. You can be as pretty as you want with your rush, but really what works on a day-to-day basis is power. You have to have a level of power, whether you're attacking the edge or not, or whether you're bull rushing, speed to power. And he's got power in spades. So to me, it would be Jared Verse would be, you know, him and Latu would probably be those two guys. On day two, it's a guy who I have a day one grade on, and he's one of the most unique prospects I've ever graded. His name is Austin Booker from Kansas. Played at Minnesota for 2 years, got 8 snaps in 2 years, transferred to Kansas, including special teams. I believe he took 515 career snaps. And that's it. And in that 1 year at Texas, I saw so many flashes that I had to put a first round projection on him. He's 6'5" in that neighborhood, 6'5", 6'6". He's only 240. That's the concern. But he plays stronger than his size. He has a relentless nature and uses his length and the long levers to be able to work past or eventually through. Like, he's an eventual player. Even if he doesn't beat you at first, he's going to eventually slip off of you. Like, you just can't keep him in front of you. But he's got unusual amounts of power for being 240 pounds. And somehow he's able to create a level of leverage. And I'm not sure how he really does it. You can sit and watch tape all day. But, I mean, he really had a terrific game against Banks from University of Texas at left tackle. This guy is going to be a first-round pick. And you watch that game against Texas, and you're like, holy crap. And, you know, the scared me would have put I'll give him a low 63, even though I think highly of him. And now after doing this for 10 years, I'm like, screw it. I see a guy who's got a chance to be unbelievable. It may take him a year or two to keep getting experience and maybe grow into his body more, but I missed on Max Crosby because I thought he was too thin. I'm not missing on another Max Crosby. So my comp is Max Crosby, and I'll just roll with Austin Booker as my guy in day two that's going to shock the world. And then finally, day three, I would say, let's see, day three. Let me go with let me see if there's a linebacker or a wide receiver I can think of. Let's see. This is a little harder without an offense. So Nerzat, I think his name is Nerzat. I think he's going to be an early – could be an early fourth-round pick. He's a center from Penn State, and he came over from Cornell where he played tackle. He moved to center at Penn State, and I mean, I'm watching him against Jerzon Newton, a.k.a. Johnny Newton from Illinois, and this guy is handling Newton, and I'm writing him up because he's one of my combine guys, and I'm just thinking, why is no one talking about this guy? He's 319 pounds. He's broad. He's really strong. He plays with great body control. He has strong hands. These are things I like from offensive linemen. He's clearly got the size to play guard as well, so he can play center guard. I mean, you know, for me, I put a starting grade on him, a future starting grade on him, because this is what they're supposed to look like, and I firmly believe he'll be a starter, but centers, you know, sometimes can get pushed down a little bit, so he could slip into the fourth round. So that would be one of those guys, I think. Oh, and Tyrone Tracy, let me tell you about him too. I don't think Tyrone Tracy goes in the first three rounds. He was a former wide receiver who moved to he's at Purdue, moved to running back, and I mean, this guy sees the hole. Like, he has this this unbelievable instinct once he gets inside of running lanes to dip and dart and feel the movement of defense and just make quick counter cuts. He is a physical finisher. He just refuses to go down easily. He has spin moves to get off of tackles, stiff arms. I love guys who are that competitive runner. He has the wide receiver running back talent. And I talked to a friend of mine who's in the league the other day, and he said, you know who I'm not hearing anyone talk about is Tyrone Tracy. I'm like, dude, that's my dude. That's my guy right there. So I'm excited to see him. And that's one of the things, you write 500 players, man, that's a lot of arduous stuff. But every once in a while you'll get to tape, and I'm sure you guys think the same thing. You just get to certain players, and you're like, man, this is a lot of fun watching this guy play. A lot of fun. He's like my own little secret, kind of. Well, you think that until other people find him. But it still makes what we do fun when you find those guys that you just – yeah, it's not a chore getting through the tape. You want to keep watching more and more.
Well, we had Tyrone Tracy ranked. We did not have Hunter Newzon ranked, so that one's going to look bad on us. All right, last one for me, Lance. I'm sure you do this exercise. We do it, me and Coop, and we always love to look at our what we call misses or guys maybe we wish we had ranked higher. Is there anyone from this past year's rookie class where you're kind of kicking yourself or it keeps you up at night that maybe you didn't have them a little bit higher of a grade?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Puka Nacua. I thought I had him written up pretty well. I talked about his ability to win contested catches. I said I thought he struggled to get separation, but that's one of those great learning experiences is that, you know, sometimes when you tighten up your route running, it helps you become a better separator. You don't have to have this incredible burst. And you're on a team with Cooper Kupp. I've got to imagine that Nacua talked to Kupp every once in a while and learned some tricks of the trade. And Cooper Kupp gets open all the time as a 4-5 guy. Puka Nacua, you know, I wondered if he was going to be a separator. My gosh, the guy could have easily been the offensive rookie of the year. So, yeah, that's one. My 6th-round projection on him maybe is off a little bit. Well, I think he was drafted. I don't know where he was drafted, but, I mean, that guy ended up playing unbelievable football.
He's another one, you know, Lance, that's funny. I know you like Latu and you like Nacua. Both those guys started their career at UW. You know, Puka was one of those guys, you know, fortunately for us at the time when we were at Washington, USC was down with Clay Helton. That was an opportunity. It kind of provided him, you know, itself to us, and then ends up going to BYU. I always felt like he never put his best foot forward on tape. He was just kind of incomplete, which I think probably, you know, made it a lot more difficult for you guys at your level to evaluate him, just because whether it was healthy or transfer or whatever it was, you saw flashes of the ability, but never the consistency that you saw.
Yeah. And Senior Bowl, you know, it's funny you say that, because at Senior Bowl that got popped and I was like, ooh, man, that's a really good catch. Ooh, that's a really good catch. And I reminded myself, well, you know, I did have that. He makes good catches and contested catches, but it was just different. You could just sense that maybe he was a little better than I thought he was. And I raised his grade a little bit, but nowhere near as high as he ended up playing. And that's kind of the, you know, that's that randomness of the league. Guys can look just phenomenal in college and workouts and all that. And sometimes they just, you know, through things that you can't project, whether it's attitude, personality, fit in a locker room, commitment to the game. There's a variety of confidence level. There's a variety of things that can cause a player to not reach potential. And there's a variety of things from the high school level up to the college level to the pro level where – there's certain guys, you know, my brother coached Jaquizz and James Rogers and Quiz Rogers. And these little guys, man, I saw them completely turn around an entire high school. I mean, completely turned around a team that hadn't won a district game for like 4 years. They get there, and before you know it, they become state champs, beating RG3 in a state championship game, with Quiz and RG3 having this incredible battle. And I got to tell you, man, sometimes the heart and the will and the desire, when you have that, it can, as long as you have enough of the traits, it can really rocket you forward. And for some players, you just, you know, they just didn't get that opportunity, or they just need the right boost of confidence, or maybe even just find the right scheme.
Lance, we appreciate you jumping on as always, man. We always learn a lot, both Andrew and I, having you on here. And hopefully you, the listener at home, has learned a lot as well. You can follow Lance Zierlein at Lance Zierlein on Twitter. Also check out his work on NFL.com. Guys, we appreciate you joining us. You can check out Andrew and I's work every Tuesday and Wednesday, 5 o'clock Eastern time, on the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. We'll see you next time.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.